It's been said admiringly that Judy Blume has written a book for every conversation you do not want to have with your child. And since her first novel was published in 1970, she sold more than 80 million of those books. But not everyone has approved, and Ms. Blume's works for children and young adults have been among the most banned or challenged books over the past 8 years, putting her in some pretty good company: Mark Twain, Kurt Vonnegut, John Steinbeck, Alice Walker, J.D. Salinger, Aldous Huxley, Toni Morrison, J.K. Rowling. She's here to talk about her latest works, a series of three books all dealing with sibling rivalry that follow the clashes between an annoying little brother nicknamed The Pain and his know-it-all big sister, The Great One. They're published by Delacorte Press with illustrations by James Stevenson. And I'm very pleased to welcome Judy Blume back to the show. Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
These books are not likely to get you into the same kind of hot water that some of the others have.
You know what? You never know. You never know. If you try to write a book that won't be challenged or banned, you'll fail. Because, I mean, I just got a letter from a mother about Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, a book that's been read by zillions of kids and by teachers in school every year.
Librarians, regularly.
She objected to the fact that I didn't take the side of the reptile who is swallowed in that book, and that reptiles have feelings and feel pain, and she didn't like that. So you see, you know, it's contagious, this book banning. You know, this is Banned Books Week.
Yeah, actually, the end of September, and you were honored.
It is. It is this week. I was in Chicago last weekend celebrating Banned Books Week, and it runs all this week, which is almost over, but still.
It puts you into some pretty heady company. But when you write books that are aimed at mostly kids and young adults, you have actually been here in the past to talk about one of your books that was written for adults. But still, when you're writing those books, are you surprised when suddenly people get so upset about the reptile? Or in other cases, well, you did deal with touchy subjects. Did you know at the time when you were writing about masturbation or menstruation, did you suspect that people would get all freaked out?
You know, I didn't know anything when I was writing those books. And it's so when I look back, I feel so lucky to have written at a time when I didn't ever feel the censor on my shoulder. The advice I give to young writers now is you can't write with the censor on your shoulder. You have to kick that feeling away so that you can write from deep inside, so that you can write fearlessly. And while I was a fearful person, I was pretty fearless in my writing.
Do you have in the back of your head the thought that there are things that parents do have a hard time dealing with? I mentioned that earlier, that you've written books for every conversation people don't want to have with their kids. In this case, we're talking about sibling rivalries, and parents often are very uncomfortable when kids get into fights. They feel like if they sort it out, they're going to be taking sides, and they don't want to really do that.
They don't like it when their children say, as the little children do in this book, and they're only 6 and 8 years old in this new series about The Pain and the Great One, when they say, "I knew it. I knew you loved him better than me. This proves it."
Now, you dealt with these characters earlier, didn't you?
Many years ago. Well, I didn't revive them. I always had, first of all, when I first wrote about them, they were based on my own son and daughter. It was my daughter who named her little brother The Pain and named herself The Great One. And I always thought what fun it would be to write about them again, but everything else got in the way. And so now I was able to say, I really want to do this, but in a very different form.
Well, it is something of a cliche to ask a writer of fiction if a work is autobiographical. I can ask you that.
You can. And I would tell you that certain books are, but these are not. Although, you know, inspiration may come from people you know. I mean, and certainly there are stories in these books that were inspired by my grandson. There are stories that I remember from when my children were young, but none of them.
And you didn't have a sibling?
I do have a sibling, actually.
Was there a rivalry?
I'm the little one.
Are you the pain? Or
never.
You're
never.
The great one?
Are you kidding? I wouldn't I wouldn't say that in front of my brother. My brother is 4 years older than me. I think that's different, and 5 years ahead of me in school. So it was very different than being as close as the Payne and the Great One are.
Didn't you celebrate your 70th birthday recently?
I certainly did.
How do you maintain the connection to young children?
Because that never goes away. I think, you know, I mean, some of us, I was just at Maurice Sendak's 80th birthday celebration. And there are some of us, I have no idea why this happens, but we always identify with the child inside us, I guess, and therefore children. I connect with kids, with little kids. I love it.
You also like to get into their heads. In these stories, You alternate between the brother and the sister as narrators.
Yes, yes. Telling the stories from different points of view is fun because then you get to say, I knew it, you loved her better than me, or you loved him better than me.
And kids will connect to that.
Oh, well, they're funny. I mean, they're humorous. I've never had the pleasure of doing books that are really illustrated, and working with Jim Stevenson, you know, is just... You can't get better than that. He's fabulous, and he's added so much humor to these books.
There is one chapter in each of these books that doesn't follow the pattern of alternating the brother and the sister. You end up each one with a poem from the point of view of the cat.
I do. And when we record these books in the studio, I get to read the part of Fluzzy the cat. Yes, I love Fluzzy.
Were there any books that influenced your literary taste when you were growing up? Did you read these kinds of... Well, books were different then, weren't they?
Very different, yes.
You mentioned Frog and Toad in one of the stories here.
But Frog and Toad were for my children, not for me. I didn't have anything like that. I did fall madly in love with Madeline when I was about four.
That's because she was subversive. And it's really interesting that the subversive books all appeal to kids, and the parents are always horrified. They almost feel like the books are encouraging their kids to act out.
Yes, or to defy authority, or to be a not good girl. I mean, I grew up hearing, be a good girl, Judy. Nobody had to tell me that. I knew what was expected of me. But in my fantasy life, I was not a good girl.
Mm. So the books are still an extension of the fantasy life?
I don't know. That's an interesting idea, and maybe part of it, maybe so. After all, I wrote those naughty adult books. Maybe that's the fantasy life.
My guest is Judy Blume, whose latest books are three books that deal with a brother and a sister, The Pain and His Big Sister, The Great One, published by Delacorte, with illustrations by James Stevenson, a number of stories in each one of these books, one called Going, Going, Gone, another one, Soupy Saturdays, and the third one, Cool Zone.
And may I just say, there will be a fourth one coming out next May.
Now, what determines whether you're writing a book for a kid, for a young adult, or for adults? I mean, obviously, you can ask that kind of question of somebody who alternates between short stories and novels. Why was this one a short story, that one a novel? It's obvious that you're not going to write about The Pain and The Great One for adults. But still, what happens? Do you just get an idea for something and say, I'm going to be writing an adult novel this time?
I hear the voice. And
it's the voice first?
For me, well, what is it first? I wish I could figure that out. I think it's... I wanted to do these books. I knew that I wanted to do these books. But before I told anybody I wanted to do them, I sat down and wrote a story or two to see if I could do them, because I really wasn't sure. And when I knew that it could work, and I usually do know that myself, you know, I read it, I enjoy it, whatever, then I knew that I wanted to write a few of these.
You weren't sure? With 60 million books sold, you're still insecure?
Absolutely. Do you know any writer who isn't? Totally. I never know.
There have been a lot of young adult books recently that have become popular with readers who are older than the target audience. The Harry Potter books, for example, and Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series. Why do you think that is? Some people are suggesting that people aren't growing up.
Oh, I would hate to think that. You know, I think that any age group can enjoy a book with a younger character. I mean, I enjoy picture books. I enjoy books for younger children. There's no reason why you shouldn't. Why all the adults with Harry Potter and vampires, and I don't mean that in the same, you know, Harry Potter, comma, vampires. I don't know. Whatever makes you feel good when you're reading, good, go for it.
And those books, people call for censorship of those books because they don't fit in with their religious beliefs. When you wrote Forever, which was the second most challenged book in 2005, I don't know what it was last year, but it had to be up there. Did you suspect that kind of thing was going to happen?
You know, when I started to write in the 70s, we didn't have the kind of organized censorship that we have today. We didn't have groups of people coming together to say, we are going to go after these books.
And because it was assumed that the books would never even make it out of the publishers or that the libraries wouldn't buy them.
No, that's not right at all. I mean, from my point of view, the 70s was, it was a much freer time in which to write. It was a freer time for kids to find books that might appeal to them. It was a very good time. And the censorship really started after the political election of 1980. And that's when the censors came out organized and determined to rid the schools and libraries of not only the books they didn't want their children to read, but books that they didn't want any child to read.
Now, why do you think then Ronald Reagan didn't say, let's go out and censor the libraries?
No, but that is when the religious right came out and said, it's our turn now.
Although the list that was attributed to Sarah Palin turned out to be a fabrication, no one was surprised to find your books on it.
Because while it was not true that she presented this list to the librarian in Wasilla, that is a true list of banned books. Mm-hmm.
They could have been found in any community.
Yes, any community where someone was determined to ban books. You know, often book banners don't read books. They just get lists and say, oh, yes. And it's always books that readers like.
So does the notoriety a book gets from the attempt to censor it actually add to its popularity?
I don't know. I mean, among the curious, maybe. I think, you know, when I was growing up, I heard if something is banned in Boston, then you want to see it or read it. And I remember movies that were banned in Boston, and I wanted to see them.
You've edited a book of short stories on this subject called Places I Never Meant to Be. So are you against censorship in all of its forms? Or do you believe that in some cases children have to be protected from hateful ideas?
I am against censorship. I think that books that are available to kids in schools and libraries are selected by professionals. And if you want to challenge a book, then please explain that to the teacher or the librarian. Maybe that book isn't right for your child, and your child doesn't have to read it.
It's like telling people you can change the channel if you don't like the show that your kids are watching.
Yes, you can.
And in this case, they actually have to go to a store and buy it or take it out of the library.
Yes.
So you said that you have some more another book coming out with The Pain and the Great One, because these characters stayed with you?
It's only four books. I mean, I knew from the start that I was going to do a quartet of these books. And I did them, I don't think I've worked so hard in years and years and years. It seemed to me I was always on a deadline, something that I'm not used to, really, because I usually just do a book and I don't show it to anybody until it's finished.
And when you work with an illustrator, in this case with a great one, James Stevenson, is there some kind of an exchange? Does he say, you know, Judy, if you just change this a little bit, I have a great drawing that I can provide?
There is no exchange. Not only that, no one would let me meet him. And I said, please, please, someone let me meet him. I respect him so much, I would never tell him what to do. And finally, a friend of mine said, you know what? I'm friends with him. I'm going to have you both to dinner. And it was wonderful.
And then, of course, when you got the illustrations, I'm sure you were more than pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely thrilled.
Judy Blume will be giving a talk tomorrow at the 92nd Street Y as part of the children's reading series. It's sold out, but sometimes if you go to the Y, you can get on a waiting list and get in there. I'm sure that a lot of people are interested in hearing your thoughts also because of Banned Books Week. The Penn has been doing stuff in connection to it. Do you feel like it's the problem is getting worse?
No. I think that we are so much better prepared now than we were when it all began 20, 30 years ago. Libraries have their policies in place. Books can't just be taken away. I think teachers are less afraid. I think principals are less afraid. This is very good because censorship does depend on fear.
Judy Blume's latest books, three of the four books dealing with The Pain and the Great One, published by Delacorte with illustrations by James Stevenson. Thank you so much.